Would you like to play some football?
Welcome to Gridiron and the Gospel, a faith and college football podcast. We have made it to episode 5, and we've made it almost to the end of week 1. Finally, we're in week 1 of college football, but because it's week 1, it's Labor Day weekend, we record these on Sunday nights. Florida State and LSU are actually playing as we record, so please keep that in mind and don't, like, you know, get on us too badly if we don't have instant reaction to that. We may talk about that. Who knows? If it's a big enough, important enough result, we'll probably talk about that next week. But I'm George Schroeder.
I'm Brad Edwards. And let's get going, George.
We're gonna get that cold open right at some point. That's my bad. Hey, Faith, Gridiron Gospel is presented by Subsplash, so I need to go ahead and tell us about that because we're so grateful to them. Subsplash allows your church community to access messages, resources, and even give to your church from one place. And it also equips church leaders to connect with their congregation in ways you never could have before. Subsplash is so much more than just a church software. It brings people together, it empowers giving, it fosters discipleship, and it transforms lives. And if you're interested in learning more, you can book a demo, and I'd encourage you to do it at subsplash.com/SBC. And when you use that link, you'll get a special discount for churches, but you do have to use that link for the discount. So it's subsplash.com/SBC, subsplash.com/SBC. And so, as I said, the first weekend of college football isn't even over yet, but we're finally into it, which is great because this is episode, what did I say it is? It's five. Episode 5. And, you know, LSU and Florida State are playing. Tomorrow on Labor Day, we've got Clemson and Duke. But with Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we got our first full slate of college football action. And it's been terrific. First, because it's back. And second, because it's been terrific. We'll get into it, all of it. But one thing to remember, and I know you agree with this, college football fans and those of us who cover the sport too, we routinely watch week 1 and overreact. So we'll try not to do that, and we'll probably do it anyway. But we're actually going to talk about that a little bit later. But Brad, you know, let's talk about sort of what we saw in week 1 without trying to overreact.
Yeah, so I guess if I were to go with a big picture takeaway, let's just start at the top of the rankings where, you know, we knew that three of the top teams, arguably the three most talented teams in the country, all had a new starting quarterback. And let's be honest, none of them look like they're ready to win a national championship in week 1. Georgia, I believe, had 7 points with 5 minutes left to go in the first half. Alabama, as impressive as the score ended up looking at the end, and Georgia's did too, Alabama had 14 points with 5 minutes left in the first half. What, Ohio State ended up with 23. So those were the three teams with the new starting quarterbacks. But even Michigan, which, you know, returned a lot on offense, only scored 30 for the game against East Carolina. And so you look at the teams at the very top, and they were in, you know, some ways sluggish offensively. Obviously, it didn't matter with the opponents they were facing. But it's a long season, and I have no doubt that all three of them will look very different by the time we get a few weeks in. But that was just kind of one takeaway, is that if you're someone that's not in that top four or five in the poll going into the season, and you're looking for hope that this might be a year that you would have a chance, at least for 1 week, there's a glimmer of hope, because none of those, at least for good portions of the game, look like a national championship caliber offense. Although, like I said, I expect that they will pretty soon.
No, I think that's right. And when you think about those three teams, there's also a common thread there too, right? In quarterbacks. So that's part of it. But, you know, those were games you knew they were going to win. It didn't matter a ton. The one I was a little bit concerned with is I really thought Ohio State looked pretty pedestrian. Now, it doesn't matter. Again, the one thing you said was, you know, they're not going to win a national championship in week 1, right? I mean, that's the key, right? They don't have to. That happens in week whatever, 15 or 22 or whatever it is. But you know what I mean, 15th game of the year. So I have no doubt that they'll round into shape. But until you start to see the quarterback play really pick up, especially at Ohio State, then I think that it's fair to wonder what that's going to be like. So I think that's a fair big picture takeaway. You know, I'm not sure there was a whole lot else that I took away from week one. And again, I think we'd have a bit better picture if we had waited to record this on Monday and had looked at the LSU-Florida State game, because that's two schools that you really think maybe have a chance to break into that upper tier. So maybe we'll get into that next week. So I think that's a good big picture takeaway. I think the other one, and this could fit into one of the other categories we're going to talk about, that's a big picture takeaway, is we heard nothing but hype and skepticism kind of in equal doses about Colorado all offseason long. And the big picture takeaway, at least from week one, is, okay, there's actually something going on in Boulder, or actually in Fort Worth yesterday, but in Boulder, Deion's got it going. Or at least there's substance behind the smoke, right? And I don't know how you could watch that game and think anything else. And I have some more thoughts on that I may get to here in a minute. But my big picture takeaway, and obviously in my context, in Arvada, Colorado, west side of Denver, 20 minutes south of Boulder, the media has been dominated leading up to the season about Deion and are the Buffs going to be good? The fans are all excited, but I think a healthy dose of is it real or not? And so now they're all overreacting, right, in the great way. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But big picture, how could you not be impressed by what they did at TCU yesterday?
Yeah, and I think that's fair because of the Deion factor and all the hype around him coming in as the new head coach. Like in any other season, if Colorado had pulled an upset week one, it would have mattered, but we wouldn't be talking about it to the extent that we are. And so, yeah, I mean, as far as that being one of the major storylines coming into the season and the team exceeding the hype, I think it definitely was one of the big takeaways for people all over the country. Whether you think they're a top 25 program or not, it was a major story.
And by the way, I'm guessing they will be a top 25 program because of the overreaction thing. We'll talk about that. But look, they were 1-11 last year, and it's not 1-11. They were losing games by almost 30 points a game. They were the least competitive 1-11 we've seen probably in a Power 5 conference in a long time. And by the way, for this year, the Pac-12 still is a Power 5 conference. We haven't even talked about, and we don't have time to talk about, the fact that the dissolution of the Pac-12 is complete, basically. The only two left, the two-pack, so to speak, are Oregon State and Washington State, because the ACC, in a crazy move, has picked up California, Cal Berkeley, Stanford, and SMU. And all three of those schools, especially SMU, have agreed to take either lesser shares for some long period of time, or SMU agreed to take no TV money for 9 years. But the ACC has picked up those three schools, and that means they've taken two of the four Pac-12 remaining schools away. And we don't even have time to talk about realignment, and that's okay with me because we got college football to talk about now.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, George, that kind of leads me in, though, to... let me just tag what you said by saying it still makes no sense to me why the ACC would do this. But that's for another day. But the next topic we were going to discuss is like, what is the coolest thing you saw in week one? And for me, it would be the four programs that had been under the microscope for the last few weeks because they were left behind by conference realignment. And it would be Cal and Stanford, who you mentioned, you know, were just a few days ago picked up by the ACC, as well as Washington State and Oregon State. And I thought it was really cool to see those four. Apparently, the players, forget the fans and all the conversation around the university and the athletic department and even the football program, but the players and coaches for those programs were not affected in the least, because all four of them went out week one and not only won on the road, but won convincingly. And by the way, those are four programs that, especially when you look at Stanford in the last few years, those are four programs you would not expect to win on the road very often, right? So for them to not only do that, but do it in impressive fashion, I think it really just speaks to the resilience of the players. And there's so many times that we get caught up in these storylines and we make them out to be so important. And we convince ourselves that the players must be a mess because of all this stuff going on. But the truth is, what's going to happen in the future beyond this season doesn't affect them. They've been busting their tails all spring and summer to get ready for a season. And they're not going to let that be derailed by something that's going to happen starting next year. And just a reminder that the players and the coaches are in a bubble that is separated from all the noise that we like to participate in as fans. And I just thought it was really cool under those circumstances to see those four teams go out and play as well as they did.
No, I agree. And I don't know if I would call this the coolest thing I saw, but with Oregon State winning earlier today, 42-17 at San Jose State. Now, look, San Jose State's not very good, terrible, right? But with Oregon State's win, I believe I'm right in saying that the Pac-12 is the only Power 5 conference that emerged from week one, because they're finished now. They don't have any games left to play, with no losses. So none of the other leagues escaped without a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
Including the SEC, which South Carolina lost to North Carolina. You know, and so it's so that's a pretty cool thing given everything that has happened.
Yeah.
And they show signs of what we thought going into the season before we even talk about whether Colorado is legit or not. And before we even heard a thing from them or saw the game at Fort Worth against TCU, they showed signs that all of those teams we thought could be contenders, the USCs, the Oregons, the Washington looked really good against Boise State. You mentioned, Utah and Florida. That was a big one. I don't think you actually did mention that, but Utah really manhandling Florida without Cam Rising at quarterback, but the defense really shutting Florida down. And then Oregon State, people don't think much about them, but they've got a bunch of really good teams, and somebody may emerge and finally give them a playoff participant. And how ironic would that be in the last year of the league?
Well, the other side of that, George, I mean, if you want to look at the glass half empty, is that, you know, after having not had a playoff team since 2016 or the 2016 season with Washington, you know, the Pac-12 is in a position where it looks like this might be the best the league has been top to bottom since the four-team playoff model began. And this is the last year of it. But are they going to be so deep that everyone's going to take multiple losses and nobody gets in? Or maybe they have a champion with one loss, but they don't get in over a one-loss team from another league. I don't know, but you know what? If they can continue to play well in the non-conference, they'll get the benefit of doubt from the selection committee if they have a one-loss champion and they're going up against a one-loss champion from a league that was not as good as the Pac-12 when it came to non-conference play. And so it's a great start for them. And I, like you, George, I would love to see the Pac-12 get back into the playoff before this four-team model ends.
Yeah, I really would too. And if you want to think about leagues that might fit the other end of that bill that you were just talking about, and again, it's week one, things change. The Big 12 did not look very good yesterday. You had the TCU loss to Colorado. Talk a little bit more about that in a minute. You had
Baylor.
Texas State, get its first win over a Power 5 program and win going away against Baylor in Waco and looked really good. And Baylor looked really, correspondingly, looked really bad. And I'm missing one.
But those are the last two champions of the Big 12, right? Like TCU and Baylor.
Well, yeah, K-State, I guess, actually.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. K-State won the conference championship game last year. Yeah, and they looked
good. That's right. TCU still got in. So
they looked good.
You know, look, so much we could talk about. I mean, you could pick so many games, right? You could talk about so many schools, but you get it just gets lost. So many good performances, some like uh-oh performances, they all get lost. And so that probably takes us – oh, you know what? I need to do this. The coolest thing I physically saw this week is a tie, okay? We will probably never mention Colorado School of Mines again on this podcast. But I went to – the Division II runner-up, Colorado School of Mines. They're in Golden, Colorado, 15, 20 minutes from where we live now. and watched them play Grand Valley State out of Michigan. It was a 2-3 matchup in the Division II polls. And it was a great game. Now, the venue was terrific. The weather was unbelievable. There's mountains all around. But it was a great game. So that's the coolest thing I saw. My wife, Shannon, and our youngest, Christopher, we had a great time. And then yesterday, a bucket list. And look, Brad, you and I have been all over the country covering college football. We've had lots of bucket list items checked off in terms of venues and great rivalries and games and things like that. But Texas Tech at Wyoming in Laramie. First time I've ever been to Laramie. War Memorial Stadium. A great venue. A fun venue. Just a wonderful place to watch a football game. Went there yesterday. Had to wait through a 78-minute rain and lightning delay before they actually finally kicked off. And it was such a great game that I have to admit that, and I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge what happened here. And here's what happened. So I had to be at church at 8 a.m. Mountain Time, right? And so long about the end of the third quarter, we all looked at each other. We had a couple friends with us. We all looked at each other and said, "We're 2 hours from home." And so we left.
You did what you had to do, George.
So it's the coolest thing I saw. And they're double overtime walk-off win after they scored the touchdown and then won on the two-point conversion by Wyoming to beat a Power 5 school, which is fun, 7,220 feet of elevation. That's the coolest thing I didn't see, but I heard it on the radio on the way home.
It sounded great. That is cool, though. You now have checked two more. Is it stadiums or stadia? I noticed you used the word venues, so you didn't have to go there.
It's stadia. But come on, man. We're right. Sports writers and sports broadcasters. We say stadiums.
So stadia, two stadia that I have not been to.
Stadiums.
You checked off.
Stadiums.
What's
we
AP
were sports
style?
Writers come and on. Sportscasters.
Whatever it is.
I don't know. Stadiums, I hope.
But yeah, no, I have been to a few in the Mountain West, but not Wyoming. That would be a cool one to go to. So good. Thanks for throwing that in there because, yeah, I mean, like, literally the coolest thing that you saw.
For sure. And most of the time, you and I are going to be watching games, like most of our listeners, probably on the flat screen, right? And so it's nice when you get the opportunity to go. And one of my commitments, now that I'm not covering sport all the time, is I want to take my little guy anytime he wants to go that I can. So I'm going to go see Air Force play.
Yep.
I'm going to go see... It's going to be harder to see Colorado play because they sold $300,000 worth more tickets. This is honest truth. $300,000 worth more tickets after that win against TCU. I'm going to go see Colorado State play. Those tickets will be a little easier to find. And you know, I'm just going to take advantage of the free Saturdays and take my little guy to watch games. So I love that. But I love sitting in front of the on the couch and watching.
Have you been to Air Force before?
One time, covered a game there years and years and years ago. It's a fantastic
venue. That's one I've been
venue.
To, but so you,
stadium.
I don't have that one on you because you've been to that stadium.
You've got a bunch of them though. I mean, you and I could start comparing that. Maybe that's an off season deal. We can start doing bigger, better stadium stories on people on each other.
Right. Yeah, we could, but for now, let's go to our next item on the list, which you teased it at the beginning of the show. Week one overreactions. And this is a popular sports radio segment on the Monday after week one because we all do it. We're all just victimized by our eyes. Like we spend all summer reading these magazines, reading internet articles, you know, just loading up with data that tells us a team should be this. And then they go out there and they look like something else the first time they take the field, and we don't know what to do with it. So, George, let you go first. What would be your biggest overreaction based on what you saw?
Yeah, I alluded to this a few minutes ago, okay? And I want to be real careful because I am because I'm afraid to say what I'm about to say, I guess. No, not really. I was really impressed with Colorado. I mean, how could you not be impressed with Colorado? They have skill position players who can flat play. Travis Hunter is outstanding. He played 129 plays at corner and at wide receiver. And he didn't just play 129 plays, Brad. He was an impact player on both sides of the ball. Made the two biggest plays in the game, one on each side probably. At first, he had an unbelievable pick on a wheel route that was going to be a touchdown. And by the way, TCU tossed a couple of into the Chandler Morris threw two picks into the end zone or near the end zone, or that game's different. But an unbelievable pick there. And then on third and 16, and some of the credit goes to Shedeur Sanders, Deion's son, the quarterback. Third and 16, fourth quarter, they're down to TCU. And if they don't convert, they're going to punt, and I think they lose by 10 probably because the momentum was all TCU. And so Sanders throws the ball right down the middle, and Travis Hunter goes up and gets it like every NFL wide receiver you've ever seen. And so they've got skill position players. And we haven't even mentioned the freshman running back, Dylan Edwards. Is that right? But
they basically have three Heisman candidates after week one, right? Colorado does.
Yeah. That's right. Speaking of overreactions, but that's how we do these things, right? So here's my point. Yeah, because I was going to mention that. One of those guys or all three of them are going to be in New York for the Heisman. And Deion is after the game talking about how he's been keeping receipts. And so he's like taking pot shots at reporters. And that's okay. That's what coaches get to do, right? And here's what I'm going to tell you, though. It's tremendous. And we're judging them based on 1-11, losing by 29 points a game last year, a complete roster remake. They had the most new transfers, a complete roster remake of any FBS program. We're judging on that, and we should. Here's what I'm going to tell you. We're also judging them because TCU was ranked 17th or something around there, and TCU went to the national title game last year, beat Michigan in the semifinals, had a tremendous season, and then we won't mention the 65-7 loss to Georgia. But it was a great, great, great season for a team that was pretty talented, very fast. TCU's lost a lot of players. And so what I'm going to say is this. Yes, Colorado was super impressive. I'm not going to overrate them. I don't even know what I think they're going to do against Nebraska at home.
They should win that game.
This weekend.
Nebraska
I think they
score.
Should based on what Nebraska can't
Colorado
score.
Can
They've
score.
Got a good defense. Yeah. Colorado can score. And Nebraska came from ahead again, and they're now 2-14 in one score games.
Defying the odds.
Since 2021. Yeah. So that said, the biggest overreaction right now is Colorado, because it's not even so much about how much better they are. They're clearly better. But as you mentioned, they're thin. And here's the bigger piece of it.
Then depth-wise, just to clarify, like that, yeah.
No, they're good-looking athletes, but they're thin depth-wise. TCU is not what they were a year ago, and I think we knew that, but we sort of overlooked that. Not only are they not what they were a year ago, they're plugging a bunch of new players in. Chandler Morris didn't play as well as he did last year against Colorado before he blew out his knee, and Max Duggan came on. And I think TCU's – I don't know what they're going to be by the end of the year. I think they'll be a pretty decent team. But they're going to look a lot more like some of those 8-4 TCU teams that we've seen in recent years than what we saw last year. And they're not that team, the 8-4 type of team. They weren't Saturday. So don't overreact all positive about Colorado just yet. They're going to find those five other sort of serious contenders. And I did say other serious contenders in the Pac-12 because I want to elevate Colorado far beyond what we thought. But that's a really tough league. And so let's not overreact and think that, you know, Colorado's headed to the playoff and those three players are all going to be in New York for the Heisman. And I know people don't really think that. But, you know, hey, Deion, you can keep the receipts if you want, I guess. I mean, you know, I'm here. But if we're going to week one overreact, that's where it's coming right now.
George, aren't you glad you don't still have to write one of those articles like Heisman Watch after every Saturday, because you would have had to put at least one of those Colorado players on there?
I'd have put all three of them on there.
There you go. One, two, three.
But think about all the guys. And Caleb Williams, by the way, is probably not going to win it again. But he's done nothing in the first two games because they've played two. USC's played two to not make you think that guy shouldn't win it again.
Right.
But no, you're right. That's for another podcast
because, I mean, one of the things that, you know, when you're looking at the Pac-12, we just talked about and how deep it appears to be. I mean, with Caleb Williams, his numbers are going to be great, But quarterbacks are held to a higher level of accountability for their team's record. And if they lose a couple of games, some people are going to, you know, kind of nick him for that. And whether that's right or wrong, that's the way it is when you're the preseason favorite for the Heisman. We've seen it so many times. We saw it within the same conference. We saw it with Andrew Luck. So anyway, that like you said, that is a conversation for another time. So week one overreaction for me. I'm gonna go with two defenses that I don't think are as good as they looked yesterday. So one of them is going to be North Carolina. North Carolina held South Carolina to, I think it was 17 points, and I believe it was 3 in the second half. 9 sacks on the game, I believe, is what it ended up being. Very impressive performance by Gene Chizik's defense. But I don't think this is like a reincarnation of the Karl Torbush defenses of the mid to late 90s when Mack Brown was coach at North Carolina right before he took the Texas job. Those were really talented, really good defenses at North Carolina. I think this was a great game that was played, but I think at some point in the next few weeks, you'll see North Carolina look very different on defense. So I'm identifying that as an overreaction because I think it's hard not to say, man, their defense looks a lot better. And they might be a good bit better, but I just don't think they're going to be a dominant defense. The other one I'll point to, and this is the team that I picked a couple of weeks ago when we were doing overrated, underrated on the preseason poll. My underrated team was Oklahoma. But I'm going to sit here right now after week one and say they are not as good as 73-0 looks, and especially I'm not buying that Oklahoma's defense is that improved. To pitch
a
shutout.
Yeah, that's a bad Arkansas State team. Right. Butch Jones trotted out a bad team from Arkansas State.
He sure did. And Oklahoma's defense, like North Carolina's, is probably improved, and it might be a good bit improved, but I have no doubt at some point, if not 3 or 4 times in conference play, Oklahoma's defense is going to take it on the chin. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to lose the game. They might be able to outscore somebody in a track meet, might be able to outscore a few teams. But that, I think, is an easy overreaction to make when you see Oklahoma, after last year's struggles, pitch a shutout in week one to say, ah, now they have a defense to go with that offense. And I'll just say, Lee Corso style, not so fast, my friend.
All right. So listen, we could go on and on and on, but we have a great guest in the second half. He'll be joining us here shortly. Dean Insera, who's perhaps as into college football as anybody I know. He's pastor, lead pastor of City Church in Tallahassee, Florida. Grew up there, but surprisingly not really a Noles fan. And he's going to join us here in a few minutes, right in the middle of the Florida State LSU game. So we're probably going to have to owe him some of, you know,
appreciate
if we ever
this.
Get swag.
That's right.
We're going to have to send him some, right? So if we ever get swag, and we will one of these days. So much to get into. But here's what we need to do. We've got to wrap this up. Got to go to the first half. By the way, we'll do picks at the end of the show, just like we always do. And Dean will join us for that, too. So let's go to the locker room, quick break, make some adjustments, get back for the second half, and we'll talk faith in college football. And some more college football, too.
Welcome back in for the second half of Gridiron and the Gospel, which is brought to you by Subsplash, the leading engagement platform for your ministry. You can book a demo at subsplash.com/SBC. When you use that link, you'll get a special discount for churches, but you have to use that link for the discount. Again, that's subsplash.com/SBC.
Yeah, and look, we're going to be joined here in the second half this week by Dean Insera. He is the lead pastor of City Church in Tallahassee, Florida. And look, as we record this on a Sunday night, you guys need to understand what a sacrifice this is. We'll get into this in a little bit later with Dean, because one of the weird things, as we've already sort of mentioned in the show earlier, is that Florida State, which happens to be located in Tallahassee, is playing LSU down in Orlando, basically as we record this. And so Dean, is thank you for taking the time out to do this. I'm grateful that you would do this right now. We usually need to do them on Sunday nights, and so that we can drop them on Mondays. And of course, this Labor Day weekend, they play football all weekend long. So thanks for doing it. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm glad to do it. My two favorite topics talking about the gospel and talking about college football. It cut half of our church attendance today, about in half, having a game in Orlando on a Sunday. So I guess me being a little bit late to the Florida State game is kind of my revenge for that.
I love that. And I want to ask you about that. What does that portend or anything else? We'll do that in just a second. But first, as we always do right at the start of the second half of Gridiron and the Gospel, it's time for On My Heart. And I know, Brad, you have something on your heart. On My Heart is presented by Legacy Way. Legacy Way, giving glory to God by sharing His love through generosity. Find out more at legacyway.org. And Brad, this week, I know you've got something on your heart.
Yeah, George, earlier this morning, Colossians chapter 3 came up in our study. And I'm going to start by hitting four verses here toward the beginning of it. And this is kind of what led me into where I'm about to go with this. But Colossians 3 verses 5 through 8, it says, "Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. In these you too once walked when you were living in them. But now you must put them all away: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth." Okay. And when I heard that, it made me think about in James 1. Okay, in James chapter 1, where it says in verses 19 and 20, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Okay, and what I want to focus on here is anger. That was a word that shows up in both of those passages I just read. And the reason that it struck me is not just because it was brought up in church this morning, but also because it's the first weekend of college football season, or at least for most teams it is. And this is where everybody started to get back in that groove and experience the emotions of college football. And it has a different effect on all of us. And so what I'm about to say is to some extent a little bit lighthearted, but I want to share a story that had an effect on my life, which is back when I was in my 20s, was attending the same church that I do now. And one of our associate pastors, who also is a psychology guy, he was speaking to our young adults group, and we were talking about anger. That was the topic. And he mentioned, you know, the difference between righteous anger and the anger that most of us display, right? I mean, it's very rare as humans that we display righteous anger. Most of the time, our anger is focused in the wrong places, as the verses that I just went through would indicate. And what struck me the day that he talked about this, what he mentioned is that for most of us, when we show anger or we react in anger, it is because in some way we are feeling like this person or that thing had no right to do that to me. And the point that he was making to all of us is that there is no body or no thing on this earth that owes you anything. As much as you may think they do, that you're not entitled to any specific type of treatment. And as strange as this may sound, the way that it affected me, or with the first place that it had an impact on my life, I'm very competitive. And I played a lot of golf back then. And I used to get so angry when I would hit the ball and it wouldn't go where it was supposed to go. And my anger was to the point where I would throw clubs. And it was just like, I was a totally different person when I would get out there on the course. And I just did not handle it very well when things didn't go my way. And when he said that, it just kind of occurred to me. It's like, you know what I'm doing? Is that I'm angry at this ball for doing exactly what it should have done according to the laws of physics, based on where I hit it. And yet my anger is against this ball because it didn't go where I wanted it to go. And it's dumb. And look, golf is an example of some of the dumb ways that we express anger. And I know there are others that we can justify a lot better than we can a golf ball, but still at the end of the day, especially when we're dealing with other people, when you really dig into it, the basis for your anger most of the time is not justified. Sure. Should somebody have done something different? Yes. But is it worth letting your anger boil over to the point where it affects relationships or it affects how you might be perceived? And especially if you're in a position where you know, everyone in that context or in your presence knows that you're a Christian. What type of display are you putting forward for the, you know, to the world, and what does it say about you? And so kind of where I'm going with this as we start college football season is that let's save our anger for the right types of things. You know, when God is being disrespected by people who should know better, when the weak are being oppressed or exploited, those are the types of things that God wants us to get angry about. Okay, but when a 20-year-old drops a pass or after a booth review, they give a response that seems contrary to the 10 replays we just saw. And I say this somewhat jokingly, but also seriously, because I've been there, and I think a whole lot of people who are listening get there on Saturdays and maybe on Sundays as well in the fall. It's only a game, okay? And let's just keep it in context. Don't allow anger over something that should not be as big of a deal to influence not only how you feel in that moment, but the way that you react in front of other people, the way that you may end up treating other people. And, you know, as I said, it may seem trivial, but it's not. And it's our ability to control our anger that is very important to the type of witness that we put forward. And so I'm just throwing that out there as a public service announcement to our listeners as we start football season, because it does matter.
Right. And most of us will completely disregard it, but it's exactly correct. So that is on my heart, presented by Legacy Way. Legacy Way, giving glory to God by sharing his love through generosity. Find out more at legacyway.org. And listen, I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I was at, and Dean and Sarah, lead pastor of City Church of Tallahassee, is our guest again. I said that a few minutes ago. So Dean, grateful to have you. I took the family last night, and mentioned this earlier in the show, but I took the family last night to Laramie, Wyoming, for a bucket list venue. And Dean actually took his family up in July, I think, just to see the stadium with nothing on it, right? So I'm one up on him here. And so I sat in the Texas Tech section. So I had a friend who got us some tickets in the visitor section, hung out there. And you know, the seething anger that you can sense from fans of both sides of a game, it's like, you know, we love college football so much, but you can feel the answer. It's easy for you to feel it. And I didn't have a dog in the fight, right? This was not one of my teams, that kind of thing. But you can feel that. And so, Dean, I wonder, you pastor, and you grew up in a university town where they love the Noles. They love FSU football. And so people are out, you know, going to watch the game tonight. They're going to live and die on what happens with LSU. And obviously, I know we're recording this, so by the time people listen to it, it's already happened. But you deal with that all the time. And you're a football, college football fan. We'll get into how you're oddly a college football fan of another very important team in Florida here in a minute. But what is that like to sort of to navigate as both a fan and a pastor, as you I'm sure you have a congregation that is just passionate about college football and specifically the Noles.
Oh yeah. You have an opportunity to either embrace it or to kind of be a fuddy-duddy about it. So yes, I'm a fan of the game in general. I mean, I watch college football all day on Saturdays. I just love it's a Thursday night. Give me Maction in November on Tuesday. I mean, I love all this. I'm Friday Night Lights, you know, high school games, you know, everything. But you have to be careful because you don't want to come across as almost being legalistic about it when you give warnings about it not becoming an idol. Because it almost seems like sometimes in evangelical circles, if you enjoy something a lot, we tell you it's an idol. And I think we should be really careful of that, because I think God's given us great things to enjoy. When I first started pastoring, first planted a church here in Tallahassee, college town, I was in my 20s, and I had a seasoned pastor who's retired now. He took me to lunch, a kind of mentorship kind of relationship, and he said, something that's going to happen to you is you'll become bitter towards FSU football as a pastor. And I said, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, because I'm a Miami fan, which we'll talk about that in a minute. But he laughed and he said, no, because you'll see it for the idol that it is. Church attendance will be affected by an 8 p.m. kickoff. People will plan their going out of town around when there's an away game, not even consider church. You'll see the amount of money people spend on trips, you know, compared to maybe what they give to the church. And all those things are probably true. But I kind of made a decision that day. If I'm going to really love our city and embrace all things Tallahassee, then I don't need to become bitter towards this great expression of fun in our city. Yes, we need to kind of prod a little bit and challenge people on certain things, but we need to make sure that it's something that is just a lot of fun, hopefully points us to just a greater enjoyment, which is our enjoyment in Christ. And how we know it's a problem is if it really does affect our mood for more than a couple hours, right? I know people where they unfollow someone on social media because they got mad about a football thing, or it's ruined friendships. You know, if that's going on, that's a big issue. But if you're just enjoying it and loving it and having fun, I want to fully embrace that. And we want the coaches who go to our church to know that we see them as in a very significant mission field. So we want to be their biggest cheerleaders. So we also want to make sure that anyone who's involved in the program feels like their church supports them and thinks it's wonderful, rather than every time we get together going, hey, you know, let's not make not a lot of football. Let's not do that. I just think got to be careful with those things. And I want to err on the side of enjoying it more than I do being the police about it. That's kind of where I'm at.
So, Dean, I'm assuming that you chose to be a pastor in Tallahassee. It was not forced upon you. And let me just ask, you can give us a little bit of that background. Why does a Miami fan choose to stay in Tallahassee and be a pastor?
Well, it's funny how much Miami football is a part of you in my story of being in Tallahassee. My family has had season tickets to the Miami Hurricanes since 1956. So my boys are fourth generation season ticket holders for Miami football. So I never knew any better. That's all I ever knew. I inherited this. I don't think I missed more than a game or two during the 58 game home winning streak, which is the all-time NCAA record for home wins. So that was my childhood. My poor boys, I grew up, Miami never lost, except on a bad call against Notre Dame at South Bend in 1988.
Counting? Who remembers that?
And then Vinny falling apart in the Fiesta Bowl against Penn State. I can name the loss.
How was your anger? How was your anger at that time?
I think my dad's still mad at Vinny. But I can name the losses. That's how few well, far between. My boys are like, when does Miami win? So hopefully Coach Cristobal could turn that around this year is the big hope. But my parents came in 1990 to Tallahassee as Miami fans for the Miami-Florida State game. And while they were here, they loved the city and were looking to get out of South Florida and just get somewhere else in the state further north. And because of the Miami-Florida State game and them driving around town looking at homes, they wound up choosing to move to Tallahassee. And so the Miami-Florida State rivalry is actually part of our story that brought us here. So, yeah, so I have fun with it. You know, if my boys, if Miami loses, they get to Florida State, they'll turn to me after the game and say, do I have to go to school on Monday? You know, things like that. And we'll just got to have fun and make fun of them. I'll make fun of Miami from the pulpit. Again, we have a lot of Florida State coaches that go to our church. There's athletes that go to our church. You know, we just want to make sure that I never want to get in the way of being able to be a minister to someone. I mean, that'd be sad if it did. That works for, but that's sad both ways for both parties involved. But on my end, what I can control, I try to keep it fun. Like, I won't say a word after a Miami win. You know, we might post a picture of like the boys together in their jerseys or something like that. But I'm not going to say anything from the pulpit or talk any trash besides a quick little lighthearted, you know, kind of thing. So it's just not worth it to me as a pastor here.
So, all right. So I love that. And it makes all the sense in the world. I guess I would ask two questions first. So through the years in Tallahassee, and then certainly the last, you helped me out, 15 years or so as a pastor in Tallahassee, City Church is 15, 16 years old now, right? Is that right?
Yeah, 16 years old.
Something like that.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So have you softened toward the Noles? You know, the people you have in the church, just to the, you know, and or are they still enemy number one or two?
Well, to me, I'm able to see, this is going to sound so super spiritual, and I don't mean it this way, but it really is the truth, my heart behind it. I can see the humanity behind it. Like, there are guys who are coaches who are members of our church. Like, their livelihood and their work depends on Florida State winning. That's just how it happens. You know, Florida State's head women's basketball coach is a member of our church. So my family, we are huge FSU women's basketball fans. You know, we go to all the games, you know, to support her. We may miss two or three games the whole home season for women's basketball. So yeah, so in a sense, that the humanity side of it just matters to me more. I've had tons of Florida State baseball players go to our church over the years. I'm a huge Miami Hurricane baseball fan. Huge. I follow really closely, you know, but when our guys are up to bat, we want our guys to do well, you know, so that's kind of where I am with it. But you better believe that there's no garnet and gold in my closet. There's only orange and green.
Well, so in my second question, it kind of looked, so Brad and I both grew up as college football fans, and then we covered the sport. So we understand it sort of, for a long time, it sort of dictated our livelihoods too, right? And then God's taken us in other directions. And we're both grateful for where he's taking us and is taking us. That said, we remain college football fans. One of the things that sort of has, and I think we may ask pastor after pastor after pastor on this podcast, I don't want it to be the same every time, but one of the things that I wonder about, and you've touched on this, is, okay, sort of the, it can be an idolatry, especially in the South. And I don't want to give short shrift. I was a columnist in Eugene, Oregon, and they love them some Oregon football. Okay, don't get me wrong. But I think about it in the South because we have this sort of the Southern evangelical culture too, and you've written about that in a book that has nothing to do with football, really. How do you deal with, as a pastor, and not be a fuddy-duddy, sort of the idolatry that can come when we actually probably consider that stadium on a Saturday more a cathedral than city church?
Yeah,
or my church, or Brad's church.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said about the reality that we get more excited often, and I say we because I'm not exempting myself from this, about a touchdown than we do a baptism. You know, that's not some kind of false dichotomy. Yeah, there's something to be said about that, but I think we're so far removed from that being strange in Southern culture for Christians. We don't even know how to talk about it because it's such a normal part of, you know, it's normal to spend thousands of dollars on parking spaces and tickets and those kind of things. It's, you know, it's normal to never, ever miss a game, even if it's raining, but to not go to church on Sunday morning because you're a little tired or because you just didn't feel like it or the weather's not great. Like, it's become so normal that we don't even, like, it's like when David Platt talks about radical. He's saying the things I talk about in the book Radical, if you read the Bible, they're just called normal.
You know? Right. They're not radical. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's what's become so hard as a pastor to go, how do you even begin to talk about this? You know, it's like when you tell people to pick up your cross and follow Christ. You know, that's written, and that's Jesus' words, his timeless, eternal, inspired words for all believers at all times, everywhere, forever. And that's written or said first to a first century audience that by picking up their cross, it actually meant like that maybe they could die because they were going to follow Jesus. You know, for us, it's like, pump your fist and go get them, buddy. You know, it's just so different in just how it translates because we've removed ourselves so far from it. So I think the way to really do it is just kind of in individual conversations more from the pulpit because no one's going to ever really think that's them. You know, whenever you say things like don't take politics matters, but don't take it too seriously. No one thinks they take politics too seriously. That's everybody else. You know, no one thinks they're rich and everyone thinks they're generous. Right. Like there's kind of how we are. So when we talk about idols, like, oh yeah, don't make football an idol. You know, don't make Taylor Swift an idol or, you know, like, I think it's more, what kind of effect does it have on you? That's what I want to see. Like, does it actually alter your mood? Is it the number one priority in your life? Is it more than just a hobby and something that's a lot of fun that you and your buddies can talk about? I also think it's an amazing missional opportunity for conversation. Because one way that I can just have conversations with people all the time in Tallahassee is I can talk sports. Like, I can talk sports all day long. So it's an instant conversation starter with unbelievers, with people like that. So, like, let's keep it that kind of way. Let's keep it a fun thing we do. Let's keep it an opportunity to be social and have gatherings and have conversations and, like, use it really for good rather than see it as a god. But I think we have to first examine our own hearts and just be self-aware and go, where is this more than just a hobby or more than just fun for me? So if I give more to Florida State football than I do to my church, that's a problem. If I won't miss a Florida State game that goes till 12:30 at night, or I will go in the pouring down rain, but I, or 110 degree weather, but I won't go to church at my early service one day because I'm like, that's the kind of stuff we got to go, what's going on here? And I think we do responsibly, not as pastors, but as Christians, to have those conversations with folks and go, hey, like, let's really think about where this goes too far more than just something that's just a lot of fun.
Dean, I realize that Tallahassee is a city. It's the capital of Florida. But it's also a college town at the same time. And then you alluded to the membership of your church and how there's a decent amount of it that is either student or related to the university. And I'm just curious, what type of dynamics exist that probably don't at a typical church because of the university that's right there?
Yeah, well, a few things. One, we really go by the university calendar. So we're going to plan, if we're going to plan events, the first thing we're going to look at is the home football schedule. Because that's anything from if you're getting married, if there's a church retreat. You don't do it during the 7 home games of the year. Like, you just don't. If you do, if you plan a wedding during football season on a Saturday, I mean, you are talked about behind your back more than you possibly can imagine. But back to the idol thing, I know people.
By the pastoral staff, yeah, apparently. No, it's a joke.
But here's the thing that's problematic. We don't realize just how strange it is. I know people won't go to a friend's wedding because there's a football game at the same time. It's like, I love college football like too much, but what are you going to remember more? The Louisiana Monroe game at noon or your friend's wedding, right? Like that's when we have issues. You know, we can begrudge. And again, I'm rolling my eyes too. And you planned your wedding during football season. Like, what does it matter with you? But the fact that people would even consider, you know, skipping their friend's wedding to go to that's where there's issues, I think, for idols. But we have to look at the calendar. We also know that what to expect. So again, with Florida State being a lot better now, their games are on TV late at night. So we know our early service is going to be cut in half if there's a late kickoff. We can't get discouraged about it because just kind of use the old overused cliche. It kind of is what it is. You know, so you just have to kind of roll with the waves that is the university setting. And then also college students, they're a great volunteer base for our church. So we know during the summertime, they're not going to be here in full strength. So you have to plan accordingly for children's ministry and things such as that. But also you get some great benefits in terms of like our youth ministry, like our middle school, high school ministry. They have all these amazing college interns and college people who are part of the ministry and serving. So there's just some really neat things that are associated with them that are part of it. But I think the biggest thing is just to always be mindful of the calendar and just the waves you got to ride with the school calendar.
So, Dean, let me ask you a couple football questions. First of all, let me just say, I think probably the answer is she planned the wedding. Now we're in big trouble. I'm in big trouble with half our listeners, 40% of our listeners. I'm sorry. It was a joke.
Well, she definitely planned the wedding, and he needs to get a backbone. So we'll throw that in there.
Yeah, at least plan it on an away game. But the problem is with the 6-day TV window, how do you do that? So anyway, my goodness. All right, so you watched football yesterday, I assume, first weekend of college football season. And again, we're recording this Sunday night. You are sadly missing some of the Florida State game. What's the best thing you saw Thursday, Friday, or Saturday of week one, Dean?
Well, I love seeing Utah without their starting quarterback. Yeah, their offense wasn't really high-powered after the first half, but the fact that they put it together and beat a not great but still talented Florida team, that was just a lot of fun. That was neat for me. I'm a Miami Hurricane fan, so the chance to come out and look better than anywhere playing Miami of Ohio, who went to a bowl last year and is a contender in the MAC, to actually see a competent offense, and to get off the field on third down on defense. We haven't seen that in a while, so I was excited about that. Again, you have to mention Deion, of course. That was pretty neat. Travis Hunter, he's just somebody to watch. I mean, what an unbelievable football player. And I was texting the buddy today. I think he's an NFL. I think he can play receiver in the NFL, obviously. But I think he's a top three pick at corner if he stays on defense for the NFL. You know, he's kind of a little salt to the wound here in Tallahassee. He was a Florida State commit until signing day. And then he flipped to Jackson State with Deion. Everyone's like, what is happening right now? And that's the first time NIL started getting really talked about as a real thing and really mentioned. So the Travis Hunter asked, but just watching him play was neat. Seeing Deion's son play quarterback was neat as well. And then the Wyoming-Texas Tech game. Texas Tech comes out of the gate running their, you know, they said on the TV, they run the fastest offense in all of college football. They run the most plays of anybody in the country last year. And Wyoming looked like they had never seen any kind of hurry up off or not, or just fast paced tempo offense before. So they go up 14-0 like that. I'm going, this is over. And I turn the game. I wake up this morning and I'm like, George was at a double overtime Wyoming win over a Big 12 team in Laramie. So that was just really cool. And that was really fun to see as well. And as not an SEC guy, to see North Carolina put the hammer on South Carolina definitely brought me a little bit of joy as well. So it was a great day.
So full disclosure, you know, church, I had to be at church about 8 o'clock. It's 2 hours from here in Arvada to Laramie. And so this is almost as bad as planning a fall wedding, almost as bad. We left at the end of the third quarter. We had to drop some friends off in a town called Windsor, about halfway between Laramie and the Denver metro area. And so we listened to it on Sirius XM radio on the way home. And the whole time I was like thinking to myself, I've never left a game early before. And we left before the fourth quarter started. And they had a walk-off, 2-point conversion to win the thing.
Sunday morning church, the Saturday night decision. You made that Saturday night.
I did. I made the right decision. It was the complete – but, you know, on the other hand, I'm also employed.
Right. You know what else surprised me was Baylor. You know, Baylor losing to Texas State. Yeah, I know Aranda was kind of the toast of the town, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago. You and I were at TCU-Baylor together when TCU beat them. It might have kept Baylor out of the playoff that year, at least in contention for it at the end of the season. So that was surprised me how they've looked last year and yesterday. So I'm a little concerned about what's happening in Waco football-wise.
That's fair. That's fair. Quick note on that. And, Brad, this is a stat you would enjoy. And here it is. You ready? Colorado brought in the most players in the transfer portal, right? We all know that. It's been celebrated. Texas State brought in the second most players in the offseason in the transfer portal, including T.J. Finley, the quarterback who had been at Auburn, who, you know, was great last night against Baylor.
Yeah, and so, all of this just goes to show how wrong I was. My rationale for picking TCU in our picks last week was that Colorado just had too many new parts. There's no way you can bring in that many new players and gel and play well in week one. And it wasn't just Colorado, apparently. It was also Texas State. So I'll keep that in mind for week one picks next season.
I mean, the game will never be the same, right? I mean, Miami's offensive line, because of the transfer portal, it looks night and day. It's night and day. It's only been one game, but it was night and day in terms of the run blocking. I was like, who is this offensive line? I don't even recognize it. The tackling was better because got a linebacker from Washington State who was all Pac-12. I mean, the portals, Florida State, Norvell just plugs. It's unbelievable what's happened. I mean, Notre Dame, for the first time probably in a generation, has a quarterback.
You know, because of Wake Forest.
It's changed everything.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed everything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's an amazing college football has changed. I actually got texted by an assistant coach last night and just basically said the game has completely changed. And we had a guest on last week, Mike Sanford, who talked about how that has completely changed for assistant coaches. And so shameless plug, y'all go back and listen to episode 4, please. So, I think we could talk forever. And Brad, let me stop. Do you got anything special that you need to ask Dean? Because otherwise, we probably need to get to the picks.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get to the picks. I would love to just dovetail off of what he said about we'll use the basketball term instead of the football term, mid-major conferences beating up on the power conferences, or maybe not beating up, but, you know, week one is always one of those where, I mean, you occasionally will get an FCS team beating an FBS in week one, but what you do get several of every year are the mid-tier conferences beating up on some of the power conferences, or the way that we like to look at it is the ones that aren't being good house guests because they were paid $1 million to come in there to take a loss, except they didn't take the loss. They walked out with a win, and there are a few of those. So Purdue would be another one of those teams that was victimized yesterday by that. And you know what? Those are fun to see because of what we were just saying. It's those types of middle of the pack schools are the ones that are just getting picked apart by the transfer rules. It's like if you know, you get those gems, those 2 and 3 star recruits that nobody else noticed you noticed them, you bring them in, you develop them, you make them into stars. And now one of the big boys comes along and is like, ah, why don't you come play with us? And then you lose them. And so it just seems to me like the Fresno States of the world, like those teams are the ones that I think are the most challenged by what we're talking about. And so to see them get a big win like that on the road, it really is nice, because I think it's kind of personal for them even more than it was before when they get the opportunity to play against one of those power conferences. So that's my final thought before we get to picks.
I love it. I love it. By the way, I do think we're going to see fewer FCS wins because of the way the best players are now can just get plucked and play
Same
immediately
thing, yeah.
by the FBS. Yeah. So, and in fact, I don't think there's an FCS team that won yesterday. And one other thing, too, we all forget that Fresno State, which beat Purdue, is the original BCS
right.
buster way back in the day.
Right.
So good
beat
for them.
Colorado,
good for
the opener years ago.
That's right.
When they had David Tarr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The old Pat Hill. Those yeah. old Pat Hill teams. Yep. We had, you know, lunch pail type.
Paint the Valley red.
All right, let's go. Let's.
that was their slogan.
That's right. Let's go ahead and do our picks, okay? Picks are presented this week and every week by Betterman. Betterman is calling an audible. They're giving men an easy-to-use playbook, a timeless strategy for how to win as a man. A free resource for small and large groups, Betterman is perfect for any gathering. Check them out at betterman.com. And so we always pick five games every week. It's kind of, you know, like every other pick segment that you've ever seen. And so, Dean, I appreciate your willingness to pick and school us so that next week we have to once again explain how we blew it and the guest picker got it right. But thanks for joining us to do that. We really appreciate it. And I'll let Brad run the show on that because Brad is the original picker on this deal. He knows what's going
well,
on.
Dean, let me start by putting the pressure on you. And I will just mention that, week zero, Todd Unzicker was our guest picker, and he took UMass to end its 24-game road losing streak, and he nailed it. That was an upset. And then last week, which one did Mike have? It was Colorado. That's who it was. So yeah, so Mike's
he did, but I thought he picked with his heart.
Well, so he kind of did, but.
For the one player that was still
right.
there.
So,
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
So Mike Sanford last week, who was the interim head coach when Dion was named the head coach at Colorado last year, as George said, kind of went with his heart, and he took Colorado as a huge underdog, and they pulled the upset. So anyway, 2 weeks, two guest pickers have successfully nailed a pretty sizable upset. So no pressure, Dean. You can go all favorites if you want to. We're not going to hold you to picking an underdog.
Yeah. He also went with his heart and picked Boise State.
He
played
he did.
Quarterback at Boise State. And that was the wrong pick because Washington, UW, dropped him.
I'm claiming Boise State will never be good again. That's for the record.
Mike Sanford's on line right. two for you.
They're so. Done.
All right. Well, let's start this week I think all five games that we've got on the board for this week are going to be fun. The first one, Notre Dame at NC State. So a little ACC flavor for you. What's your thought?
You know, I am on the Notre Dame bandwagon and cannot wait till Notre Dame, Ohio State in a couple weeks. So I think Notre Dame goes to Raleigh and wins at Carter Finley convincingly.
Okay. Convincingly. George.
Man, I'll go the same, too. I think that's right. And you mentioned this earlier, Dean, and I think the reason is they've got a quarterback. Sam Hartman changes the game for them. And this just completely different than what their capabilities have been. And I don't know what their ceiling is. We'll see about Ohio State. Of course, Ohio State's quarterback didn't look great. It's week one. You know, we overreact. I mentioned that at the top, that you know, of the first half. But Notre Dame's now played two games and looked pretty good. And so I'm taking them too.
All right. I'm going to be the contrarian here. I'm going to go with the mighty Carter Finley home field advantage here. I'm going to take NC State. And, you know, Notre Dame obviously started really slow last year. They have just reversed that this year with the way that they've gotten it going. But I'm going to pick Notre Dame to take its first loss this weekend in Raleigh. I'm going with the Wolfpack. So second game on our board, Ole Miss at Tulane, which looks like it's going to be a ranked versus ranked matchup. I mean, who would have imagined Ole Miss and Tulane? In fact, you might even have to go back to like the 50s, or if it's ever happened, that those two teams have ever played when both of them were ranked. But that appears to be what's going to happen this weekend in New Orleans. What's your pick or assessment of this game?
You know, and Tulane did the right job by giving him patience. Like this whole 3-year thing and fire a guy, like in Tulane, give him time to build. I think Ole Miss wins and pulls away pretty easily at the end, but it's probably the biggest home game at Tulane since the old Sugar Bowl. And by that, I don't mean the Superdome Sugar Bowl, like the actual Tulane Stadium Sugar Bowl. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I wish I could go. It's only 5.5 hours from my house. I wish I could. I'll be at Miami, Texas A&M next weekend with my boys. But I think Ole Miss wins big in the fourth quarter. They're winning by 20.
Yeah, and hold tight on Miami A&M. We'll get to them here in a second, right? But, yeah, I'll go with Ole Miss too. Although I'll just say one thing, and I know teams obviously change from year to year and really change from year to year. I also love the fact that Willie Fritz got time and got it going. That is a rare thing now. But I don't think Lincoln Riley thought Tulane was going to do much. And we saw what they did to them. Now, different team, different time. I'm going to go Ole Miss.
All right. Well, I'm also going to go Ole Miss. And when Lane Kiffin's offense is clicking the way that it was in week one, like it's hard to go against them the next week, and especially when they're not going up against a defense that's loaded with 4- and 5-star players. So I think it could be a really exciting game with a lot of points scored, but I like Ole Miss, as both of you do, to be the team that ends up with more points. All right, third game. Let's go Iowa State for the Cy-Hawk Trophy. This is in Ames. What's your take on this one, Dean?
Brian Ferentz lives another day, and McNamara is the difference, and the Hawkeyes win in Ames.
Did y'all see that Iowa scored 24, one shy of the average he needs, by the way, to get the extension? He's got to average 25 points a game, and they were unable to get to 25.
They were second,
I think it was 24-14.
Terrible. Second half, they were awful on offense. They're so bad.
it's just Iowa. So, but look, and I have all the respect in the world for Matt Campbell, but Iowa State has slid in the last couple of years, and I'm going to go Hawkeyes, even on the road.
Okay, and I'm going to go the other direction again, just because this is a rivalry that – I'm not going to say every year, but so often just goes the opposite of the way that you think it's going to go. And in this particular case, like you said, George, like Iowa State has taken enough steps back in the last couple of years that no one's believing them anymore, you know, believing in them anymore. And so if I have the accurate assessment of this rivalry and the way that it works out, it should be that Iowa State ends up winning this game, but then Iowa ends up having a much better season. Okay, so that's kind of the way I'm going to predict it here. So I'm going with the Cyclones at home. So we're going to save the marquee game of the week for last, which means the second to last one is going to be one, Dean, that it's going to mean a lot to you. Texas A&M at Miami. Last year, A&M won in College Station. This year, they have to return the trip. I think I know what you're going to do here.
I was in College Station last year, and it was an ugly game.
It was.
Miami, I think this is – I hate to say it's so important when it's the second week of the year. This is a really important game for Mario, and I think that Hard Rock Stadium is going to be rocking, and I think Miami's going to come out and get it done. I really do. The whole Bobby Petrino is the OC thing worries me some as a Canes fan. Like, what's that going to look like? We can't wait till after New Mexico, obviously, last week. But I think the Canes are going to do it.
Listen, I have not been a believer in Texas A&M, and I'm not sure what to make of the Petrino experiment, because I don't know if Jimbo will let him do it. And it was New Mexico. But here's what I'm going to say. They didn't score like that at any point last year. And so Petrino called the plays, it sure appeared, or there was some sort of Petrino effect on the offense. I don't care who they played last year, they didn't score like that. So, Dean, I love you, but I'm going to go Texas A&M.
All right, I'm going to go with Dean. I'm going to go with the Canes. at home. And, you know, I'm kind of torn here because I know the most A&M thing that they could possibly do would be to win this game, get their fans believing, and then go out there and lay an egg early in conference play and undo it. But even knowing that that's a real possibility, I like what Mario did in a short amount of time at Oregon, and I give him a good chance to be able to do the same thing at Miami. And so this, as Dean alluded to, like, this is the moment that you make a statement that, okay, this program is ready to take that next step. Maybe not close to what we once knew Miami to be, but if they're ever going to get back there, it starts by winning a game like this. So I'm going with the Kings.
Yeah, you got to win this game at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish it was at night. Yeah, 3:30 Eastern. I wish it was at night, but it'll be rocking there.
Yep. All right, so that brings us to the big game of the week for the nation, and one that after this season will become a conference matchup. It'll no longer be a non-conference matchup, and that is Texas at Alabama. Obviously, last year came down to the wire. Alabama kicked a field goal with about 10 seconds left to win it, but Alabama had Bryce Young then. Texas had Quinn Ewers then, but he got hurt about a quarter into the game and didn't finish it. You kind of felt like the game would have gone the other way if he had, so now it's the experienced Texas quarterback against the inexperienced Alabama quarterback, who happens to be from Texas. Your pick, Dean.
I think Bama at home. If it was in Austin again this year, I would be very open to an upset. But I think Bama at home.
So having covered college football for a long time, you know, one of the Twitter memes is hashtag Texas is back, right? And it never seems to be the case. This might be the team that really has the chance, because I think the Big 12 is wide open. I don't think there's an elite team in the Big 12, including Texas, but I think the Big 12 is wide open, and maybe Texas gets to the top of the heap. Are they a playoff team? I don't think so. That said, it's a tall order to beat Alabama at Alabama, and I'm not ready to go there. They had a great game last year, and they were not nearly as good the rest of the year. And that was not a great Alabama team. Bama wins by a touchdown, maybe two.
Okay, and I'm going to make it 3-for-3 with Alabama. In game one, I was a little underwhelmed by Alabama's offensive line, which is expected to be an area of big improvement for them this year. But we've all seen so many times the difference between a team in week one and week two. And look, that same difference could happen for Texas, because they weren't exactly sharp on offense for a lot of that game against Rice. But I just have this hunch that Alabama at the line of scrimmage is going to be a lot better than what they looked against Middle Tennessee. So I'm going with Alabama here. Like you said, at home makes the pick a little bit easier to make. So there we go, guys. Okay, I'm giving everybody one chance to do a take back. Is there any pick that you're feeling particularly anxious about that you would like to reverse? Because you got 5 seconds to reverse course. If not, we're locking them in and we're moving on.
In honor of my late grandpa, I'm staying with the Canes.
All right, there we go.
Staying with them.
All right, we want to thank Better Man once again for being the sponsor of our pick segment. They're giving men an easy-to-use playbook, a timeless strategy for how to win as a man, a free resource for small and large groups. Better Man is perfect for any gathering. Check them out at betterman.com.
Absolutely. And thanks to Dean and Sarah, lead pastor of City Church of Tallahassee and a good friend of the pod, but just of mine as well, and a big time college football fan. But man, I really appreciate your heart for Christ much more than that. So thank you for joining us, Dean.
Hey, likewise. I'm grateful for you, George and Brad. I'm thrilled you guys are doing this together. This ministry you have is an awesome thing to use the great game for gospel good. So thank you guys for what you're doing.
All right, thank you. And you know what? Thanks again, by the way, to our On My Heart partner, Legacy Way. And thanks especially to the presenting partner, Subsplash. Subsplash is so much more than just a church software. It brings people together, empowers giving, fosters discipleship, and transforms lives. You can book a demo today at subsplash.com/SBC. And when you use that link, you'll get a special discount for churches, but you do have to use that link for the discount. And again, that's SUBSPLASH.com/SBC, subsplash.com/SBC. So y'all, please visit us online at gridironandthegospel.com. Find us on Twitter or Instagram at @gridiron_gospel. Email us at gridirongospelpod@gmail.com. And be sure to rate, review, and subscribe in your favorite podcast app. And tune in next week for more Gridiron and the Gospel of Faith in College Football Podcast, because it's a BP Sports production.